Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and today we're broadcasting from the Prairie Berry Winery in Hill City. The winery's heritage goes back to 1876, when the Voida family left Moravia and came to South Dakota. Prairie Berry's fifth-generation winemaker, Sandy Voida, will join us a little bit later. And also on the program today, we'll talk with Custer carpenter Carl Svensson, who uses lumber harvested from trees infested with the mountain pine beetle. But first, it's Wednesday, and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. And joining the program today is Denise Ross, web editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. Denise, good to talk with you again.
Thank you, Carl. And I just want to say that Sandy Voida and I were classmates at General Beadle Elementary School in Mulbridge, and I think the school is no more, but I sure have fond memories of those days.
Okay. All right. Nice connection for today's show. Yes. Also with us is David Montgomery, political reporter of the Sioux Falls Argus Leader and author of the Political Smokeout blog. And David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. And unfortunately, I have no cute coincidental memories to share, so I'll just have to be one-upped by Denise there.
All right. Well, in the week since we last talked, former Democratic Congresswoman Stephanie Hersa-Sandlin has said that she's seriously considering a run for the U.S. Senate. She did an interview with KDLT-TV last week, and she spoke to the Argus Leader. And Denise, she's in Rapid City today?
Yes. She gave a speech to a group called Starting Strong. It's a group that raises private scholarship money to help low-income and at-risk, you know, preschoolers get their tuition paid so they can go to a preschool program. And she talked a lot about the importance of that for all kids, that they get that kind of early childhood care. And that was her speech to the public. And I got to sit down with her for a few minutes afterwards and talk about that. And I'm sorry, I've got my 4-year-old in the car here with me too, because I just picked him up from preschool. But, you know, she talked about, to me, about the struggle of, and I think you're going to talk a little bit about the column that I wrote for the paper, the blog post about the family struggle of a working mom trying to make this kind of monumental career decision. And so that's definitely weighing on her mind. And I think I feel comfortable in saying that she has not made that decision yet. I think she's really torn between not just her son, but the whole family that she has, you know, her parents in South Dakota, her friends that she went to school with. Many of those considerations are weighing heavily on her. She used the word struggle a few times in making this decision. So I don't think it's made yet, but she did say she'll make it by the end of the month. And I'll be working on an article today that will expand on some of this. That'll be in the Mitchell paper tomorrow.
And David, you've spoken with her recently as well. Is that true?
Denise has spoken to her more recently than me, but everything she said rings true from my experience with her, that she is talked of fairly openly about how she's struggling between whether to return to try to return to political office versus her family and her career and things like that she has right now, which is all very happy and comfortable for her. So it's a personal decision. All indications are that she genuinely has not made up her mind, and right now Democrats just appear to be waiting on her to make her decision before things move forward.
Why do you think she's been talking over the last couple of weeks after she hadn't really commented on this issue for I don't know if she ever did?
It's hard to say the exact reason why she finally opened up a little bit about this, but possibly the timeline had something to do with it. She may have been getting close to making a decision even before opening up, and figured that there's no point in hiding. She may have wanted to, by commenting about this, she can sort of send a signal to her supporters that there's reason to be excited, that they shouldn't be jumping on to other potential Senate candidates, Brendan Johnson being the key one where there's a movement trying to round up supporters for him. Speaking out a little bit can send some signals and fire up her supporters and stop her from potentially getting boxed out, as looked like might be happening several weeks ago.
Well, to follow up on some of the things that you were just talking about, Denise Ross, you mentioned that she has a 4-year-old son, and since you have a couple of young kids yourself, this is something that you wrote about in the Mitchell paper about that you really can relate, you can understand with the struggles that she's making and trying to in coming to a decision whether to get back into public office.
Yeah, I think, you know, well, in talking with her this morning, one of her major policy issues is support for working moms and working families. Other women's issues, she mentioned the sexual assault issue that's plaguing the military now. So she feels very passionate about those sort of issues. And I all of my life have sort of resisted this idea that we could carve our society up by, you know, by gender. Like, women have certain issues and men have certain issues. But I think it's also folly to just ignore the fact that being a mother of young children is a different dynamic than being a father of young children. And Brendan Johnson has kids of his own, but this is not a part of his conversation that he's having, as far as I know, that this is a struggle for him deciding what to do as a father of children, young children. But for moms, speaking from experience, it is. You want to be with your kids and every step of the way and help them and watch them grow and develop and make sure that everything's good for them. You know, you can almost overdo it, I think. But then as a professional and somebody who has a career, you also feel like you want to do those things, and those are very exciting. So it's a balancing act, and I think, you know, not to make it into this big, you know, every once in a while somebody comes out with a big op-ed about how women just can't have it all, but it's just, I think it's okay to say it's a different dynamic, and I think it's one that Stephanie Hirsta-Sandlin is struggling with. And again, it's not just her son. Her son has grandparents there. Her parents are here in South Dakota. Her friends from high school have children of similar age. So it's the whole ball of wax, if you will, that would sort of be disrupted if she were to be elected to the Senate and go to Washington, and she would have a different life. And her son would have a different life. Her parents, his grandparents, would have different lives. So it's just a big decision on the personal front as well as on the political front. And as we all know, there's a whole lot politically riding on this issue. Control of the Senate is a very big deal in not just U.S. politics, but actually global dynamics. So, you know, it's a tremendous, tremendous decision that she's facing.
Well, you mentioned U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson, who's been mentioned as a possible candidate for the Democratic Senate nomination. David Montgomery, any word yet on when he'll make an announcement about a run?
Again, it's hard to say because Brendan Johnson has declined all comment on this, citing his current job as U.S. attorney. Indications from people, from national figures and others, are that everybody's waiting on Hirsta-Sandlin to make her move or to pass. And if she passes, I would expect that Brendan Johnson would probably enter the race fairly quickly. If she does come in, then there's going to be a decision. The question of whether there's going to be a primary, or which Democrats are trying very hard to avoid, or whether he would run for another office or keep on what he's currently doing.
On the Republican side, David Montgomery, you've written about this for the Argus and for Political Smokeout blog. Some current and former state legislators are expressing interest in challenging former Governor Mike Rounds, State Senator Larry Roden, State Representative Stace Nelson, and former state lawmakers Bill Napoli. Would any of these candidates be a serious challenge to Rounds in the primary?
It all depends on your word serious, and the folly of making predictions here. I would expect that Mike Rounds would beat any of those three candidates in a one-on-one primary. That they all have certain appeals, certain strengths. Nelson and Napoli, in particular, have appeals and ties to the conservative, the right wing of the party, which is important in primaries. But I don't think either one has proven, certainly not, that never having been elected anything bigger than the state legislature, none of them has proven the ability to transfer the passion of a small group of activists into a statewide appeal across the spectrum of the Republican Party. And so I would, at this point, and candidates can always surprise you, but at this point I think the only person who would pose a serious one-on-one threat to Mike Rounds is Kristen Noem. Now, it's possible that if you get a multi-person primary, the dynamic could change entirely. But Noem, I think, is clearly in another league from all the other potential challengers.
And Denise Ross, How popular do you see Mike Rounds among the rank-and-file Republicans in South Dakota?
Well, I think he's fairly popular across, you know, the whole spectrum. I think his positive numbers are above 65%, if I remember correctly. And then the question becomes, how deep is that support? Is it just, oh, yeah, we like Mike, or is it we really like the things he does? We like him for these specific reasons. And I think you're also seeing this whole battle for the kind of the soul of the Republican Party being played out in this situation, whether or not there's a Republican primary. But the fact that the very fact that people are unhappy, Republican Party loyalists are unhappy with the fact that a two-term governor who is very popular is their Senate, might be their Senate nominee, tells you that there's a lot of different camps in the Republican Party. And I think you're starting to see sort of the middle moderate Republicans rise up a little bit to try and hold some ground. So it might not just be, you know, the right wing being so vocal anymore. I think we may see more coming from more of the moderate wing of the party, kind of defending the traditional values of the, not, this is, that's the wrong word to say, given the loaded meaning that's been associated with that, but the kind of the historical way the Republican Party has conducted its business, and within the last couple of decades, you see the right wing rising up. So I just think you're going to see that play out in South Dakota and a lot of other places, this kind of tug of war over who owns the Republican brand.
There was an interesting bit of controversy that's come up lately, and I guess this is something that's been around for a while. South Dakota Democrats are criticizing a decision to use state money to fund membership and travel to conferences organized by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. David Montgomery, what is ALEC, and why is this decision controversial?
ALEC is a group made up of legislators from all sorts of different states, as well as some business interests, that holds meetings to facilitate the exchange of ideas, information, education, and developing model legislation that legislators can take back to their states and adapt and propose. And it's legislation whose stated purpose is to promote the free market and small government and other generally conservative ideas. So Democrats are not happy with the recent decision by the executive board of the state legislature, which is dominated by Republicans, to approve both paying for travel from state legislators to ALEC events, as well as to pay for membership for legislators in ALEC. They say that ALEC is an ideological and possibly partisan organization that shouldn't be receiving state money. Republicans say that there's nothing partisan and possibly even nothing ideological about ALEC, that it's a source for education, and that lawmakers going to those events will make them better lawmakers and give them more ideas, and that they say this is much ado about nothing.
Are there similar groups that legislators participate in over the years, or over, you know, throughout the year?
The legislature has long been a member of two groups, the National Conference of State Legislatures, which is a group of legislators from all the different states, and the Council of State Governments, which includes both legislatures as well as executive and judicial branches. And South Dakota and the legislature is a member as a whole of those groups, and pays travel to some of their events. They are made up entirely of their members and supported by their members. Which is another distinction that critics point to. They say that ALEC has an unseemly role from corporations, which again is something that supporters of ALEC dispute.
Denise Ross, have you been following this controversy at all?
Well, a little bit. I've been generally aware of the ALEC controversy on a national level, which has been going on for years. And that my understanding is that they are lean heavily to the right, and you see a lot of legislation that you see popping up in several different states comes out of ALEC, and they're generally right, you know, legislation that is to the right and supported by those on the right. So it's a controversial group. There's no question about that. It's long been controversial. Lawmakers in South Dakota, before the budget cuts that Dugard instituted for a long time, I thought it was a fairly well-kept secret. Took some pretty nice trips to meetings in some pretty nice places for the National Council on State Legislatures and for the other group that David mentioned. So that's not a new thing. I always thought I would go and tally up all the money that was spent on legislative travel, and I never got the job done. But now maybe there's going to be a little more focus on exactly how much of that is going on.
We've only got a couple of minutes left here, and maybe this is not enough time to tackle this this issue. David, this is something you've been writing about lately as well, and something I can't quite get a complete handle on, and that's the robocall issue. And there have been some events happening regarding that whole another controversy over those robocalls that happened, I think, last year.
Yes, there were some robocalls that went out last year before the election, attacking Republican Party leaders for their positions on veterans issues and some other issues. And the robocalls did not include disclaimers about who is paying for them, who is sending them, which arguably, possibly, violate South Dakota's election laws. And there are currently there's one man, Daniel Willard, who is facing criminal charges for allegedly violating election laws by sending these out. And there is a parallel civil lawsuit filed by State Senator Dan Lederman, also related to the robocalls. The criminal suit is on hold right now. There is just a change of judges. They're waiting for a new court date to be set. The civil suit had a hearing on Monday following some back and forth. The Lederman and his attorney interviewed another man, Gary Dykstra of Sioux Falls, who allegedly was also a part of sending the robocalls and has filed a transcript that interview with the court in which he discusses what they did and who was involved and things like that. And so it was proceeding on a number of fronts. The Willard and others have denied the charges against them, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes out. The judge was pretty skeptical of the civil lawsuit on Monday, seemed on the verge of throwing it out. But Lederman says that he's prepared to go a different direction and file a lawsuit, not based on the election laws, but based on the Telecommunications Consumer Protection Act, which bars unsolicited calls to cell phones.
Denise Ross, does this issue, Denise, does this give us some more insight into the inner workings of what's going on in, at least in this case, the Republican Party?
That's exactly what I was thinking of, that this is just another chapter in that story of a tug of war over the Republican Party and who's in control and who gets to do what. You got one group of Republicans mad at another group of Republicans, and they're taking it, you know, pretty much as far as they can within the court system. So it's an interesting story to watch. I don't know. It's hard for me from where we're at now to see how this might ever play out to an end point.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Denise, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
And David, thanks for your time as well.
Always glad to be here.
Denise Ross is web editor with the Mitchell Daily Republic. She's based in Rapid City. And David Montgomery is political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smokeout blog. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Today we're broadcasting from the Prairie Berry Winery in Hill City. And coming up after a short break, we'll hear about the colorful family history of the winery from fifth-generation winemaker Sandy Voida. And later this hour, we'll talk with Custer carpenter Carl Svensson, who likes to work with a colorful lumber harvested from trees infested with the mountain pine beetle.